What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Web3 with a Splash of Wine podcast, where we talk about blockchain technology, DeFi, NFTs, and all kinds of other Web3 vibes. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and nothing said on the podcast should be taken as financial or legal advice. Let's dive into it. GM guys, and welcome to the Web3 with a Splash of Lime podcast. I'm your host Z, founder of EnterDAO, part of LimeChain, a blockchain development company. And today I have a very special guest, Tyler Ward. What should I say, oh man? Like, he's a prolific builder in the Web3 space for the past few years. If there were, like, I'm probably partial because we've been building together, but if there were like MVP awards for builders, I would probably give the MVP of the year to him. And probably Aaron is coming for a close second, or he's challenging for the title. But Tyler is really a prolific builder. He's been doing a bunch of stuff in the DeFi space, in the metaverse space. He's co-founded Barnbridge, Universe, LeagueDAO. He's involved with EnterDAO and a bunch of other projects as well. So I'm super grateful to have him on the show, and hope it's a great one. Welcome, Ty.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I would just add Aaron, because a lot of what I've built has been with Aaron, and like same with vice versa. Like, I'm pretty involved in Altered State Machine. I didn't do quite very much for Fluffs in particular, but I was part of that like Non-Fungible Labs. I think I helped like spread some of the early awareness, but I've worked with Aaron since pretty much 2017, and have been out to New Zealand with all of them and all of his brothers. Like, there was one point in the down market I was going over probably twice a year, three times a year out to New Zealand. Like, those people are basically family at this point. When I started to kind of get my first glimpse of success in 2020 and 2021, I think like Aaron was already building some really awesome stuff out there in New Zealand. And so I just did what I could to introduce them to like some of the people that I met in the DeFi ecosystem as a result of that. A lot of what we're working on is synonymous and parallel because we worked together for so long. I mean, and honestly, Aaron gets a lot of credit because he was one of the main people that brought me through the down market with working with like Centrality. Like, I was running a services business, and once I stopped working with Consensus, Aaron was definitely my biggest client for like 2 or 3 years, and we became really, really close. So a lot of what we're working on, like even Barnbridge, like he helped write the white paper like a year before we ever actually started building it. So yeah, we're just kind of, it's been years of work. It looks like it's all happening very fast, but it hasn't been, if you're on the inside.
Yeah, I feel you. And there's so much I want to cover today. Basically, I want to dive into a bunch of projects that you've been building. But before doing all that, can you just start with a short intro? How did you get involved into crypto? Because I know you've been in the space for a long time. How did it all happen?
So my entire career is like a interesting winding journey of like how I got to where I am now. I won't tell like the entire story like in detail. I'll just try to like cover some high level things. Like, I came out of school with a finance degree. I had already started my first company when I was in school. I was like essentially like rigging up like these liquor bottle lamps and going and selling them at like these flea markets. And I remember like we used to be in these like storage containers, because we could like go and basically put like light bulbs in, and I figured out how to like use them for like energy so that I could power the And I called it Giddy Glassware, because it's like kind of the feeling between when you're drunk and sober. And then I
nice.
I was like making a lot of skincare products at the time. It kind of pivoted into like a skincare company in a much longer story. But basically it became this like, I don't know, like decently sized like e-commerce company that like our products like were used by a ton of like rock climbers around the world because they tear their hands up rock climbing. And then like we were in like Nordstrom's and Urban Outfitters. And so like that was really like my first like foray into like entrepreneurship. But like that was a lot of like moonlighting on the side. While I was also working at like a subsidiary of like JP Morgan trading like tranche derivatives and fixed income. And so like kind of knowing that I was always like pretty entrepreneurial and like financial minded, my career just progressed. I started working in software. We went through a couple of exits. And at some point along the way, I had enough like capital to just work full time on my own stuff. I had like a portfolio of e-commerce companies, and I was like making all the products myself. Like we had like a gag gift candle business called Prank Candles that did very, very well. And like basically I went on Shark Tank. It never got aired, but I was supposed to be on like the season finale. And so I had like $300,000 worth of candles at cost. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to sell this many like fart candles essentially. And so I had to get very, very good at like digital marketing, which has a lot to do with like UI, UX, like where buttons are placed on sites, as well as just like the data science that basically goes into that essentially. And so what I realized is I was probably better at that than I was making products. Like I was more like good at marketing and selling them than the actual products were themselves. Mm-hmm. So when I had sold Prank Candles, I had sold Giddy by this time. And I was working with a couple like e-commerce groups in Raleigh. And so it kind of just went up. Like I was working with a company that was doing like 12 million in revenue. And then I helped them grow to 80 million in revenue. And it was everything from like blood kit testing type companies to like mattress like firms essentially. And so through learning how to do that, I started to pick up like a lot of like really good React skills and React talent and the things that we were all building into Shopify. And then so basically I started building a team, and most of the sales would come in like the Christmas range, right? So, I didn't really have that much to do like in the summer months or like in certain months out of the year. So like I got a dog. So I was just like sitting at home all day, and like I'd go weeks and like would only talk to like my like Chinese suppliers in China. And like, I mean, they were nice, but like they didn't even speak English. So it was like mostly through like emails and stuff. And so basically I started picking up like mobile app companies to help and work with. It was kind of just a lot of freelance work back then. But I had like probably 5 or 6 employees by this time. And one of my clients that was selling like gift cards online, he had found out that like gift cards had grown by like 20,000% in a year. And it was because people were basically using like Bitcoin and Ethereum to go and buy like $100,000 Walmart gift cards, like that they could. It was like basically tax avoidance, right? So like we weren't doing anything illegal or wrong. We were just selling gift cards. It's the people that were using them were using them that way. And so basically, somehow through us starting to target things on Bitcoin and Ethereum and us doing research on cryptocurrencies, I got in touch with, Harrison got in touch with like Joe Lubin because he was living out in New York at the time. And then through them, I met this guy named Andrew Keys, who lives out here in Puerto Rico now. And he basically talked me into moving out here as well. But Andrew pretty much sold me on Ethereum because I kind of thought, like, because of my financial understanding and Bitcoin not being backed by anything, I kind of always just thought it was monopoly money. But once I started learning that you could write like real technology and if-then statements permissionlessly into this like Web3 stack, I won't say I got it like all immediately how big it could be, but I very much like knew in that moment in 2016 that like I was never going to work on anything except this until I saw it out or it failed like Google Glass. So when the down market came, you know, I'd already been working with Consensus for a while. We helped build out Token Foundry. I mean, we were doing stuff with Consensus all the way back to AirSwap and Gnosis. And then I worked with Singular DTV, like Coinbase, all the Near groups, Coinbase more through Earn that sold. But yeah, I mean, I just I fell in love with it. And in that moment, again, I was like, I'm only working in this industry until it either fails or I fail within it. But because I was running more of like a it wasn't just marketing and branding. It was a lot of front end like development work as well. But same stuff with going back to the e-commerce. Like if you put this button here on this page, people are more likely to essentially click it. How do we like put this technology into words that people can actually like understand? So I was working with like financial derivatives group, like before Haven ever even existed. One called like Market Protocol that was really like the precursor to a lot of the code that is MC DEX now, like Monte Carlo DEX. So because I was able to work with so many different groups and I was very good at like reading these white papers and understanding what they were and kind of taking that information and putting it into bite-sized chunks, eventually, especially in the down market, I kind of hit a point that I said to Aaron, actually, I'm going to eventually start protocols, because I thought other than Aaron, a lot of my, not all of them, I don't want someone to hear this and get offended, but I thought a lot of my clients were idiots. And I was like, I think I can actually build this stuff better. So maybe I should just be working. Maybe I should be working for my own. The clients will be my protocols that I actually start. And I already had teams in place and groups I had worked with, which I think is why people have seen me roll so much out so quickly. Is because a lot of them were in the down market. I kind of knew who the best like service providers were, or people that I knew were able to introduce me to them, like you guys at LimeChain. Like Rahila introduced us. Andrew had introduced me to Rahila. We were working on a lot of the same clients. You were doing like the back end and smart contract work. DMob, who's on the Barnbridge side, like we were working with them at Singular DTV. So like I was able, like Blaze, who's doing a lot of the work with League DAO, the Fiat DAO team, we worked with those guys through like Appar, and even Daniel Luca was at DMob. Like, so I had access to these like pockets of talent that I knew were passionate about the industry. And I kind of just became this like spokesperson in the industry for not only DAOs, but the stuff that we were doing. And so it was able, it allowed me to put like a lot of people on along the way that I thought deserved to be put on.
No, I love it. I appreciate the story. And I think it's a great, I mean, a great story how you started from e-commerce and then moved into crypto. And then fast forward to now, like end of 2021, you've built or been heavily involved into a number of protocols, from Barnbridge to Universe to Fiat DAO to EnterDAO, League DAO. And what's common between, obviously those are all Web3 projects, but what's the common denominator among all of these is that they have been built in a DAO first way, which is something really specific. And I want to dive into that. Could you describe what DAO first means to you, and why have you been such an ambassador for this movement over the past 1 year or so?
I almost want to answer those in the other direction. So like the reason that I'm an ambassador for it is because I saw so many good ideas like fail because of like company structures or these foundations, the attack vectors for where different groups can go after them. Not just like in the United States, like I still try to like respect all of the laws and everything, but there's other like countries that it's tough to know, like if someone's a part of your DAO, what that essentially means or what their relationship is here. So we're trying to build these international organizations, and it's very difficult to get kind of everything right. But the bigger thing that I saw was that really, really, really good projects that even have tech that, like, it's even continuing to happen. Maybe the founder wasn't as actually as good as the community that was attracted to the idea. And so, like, there's still problems with DAO first, but it 100%, I think, fixes a lot of things with incentives. And basically, like, when we were starting all of this stuff, I think it's, like, easy to look back at 2017 and say, like, of course DeFi was going to be the first killer use case of crypto or, like, smart contracts, because that was, like, why we all got into it. Like, the banks can't just keep printing money. We can't have these, like, centralized authorities that are doing things. And I think that the reason that NFTs blew up precisely when they did was because of all the anti-censorship that was going on the internet. And these, I think that we have a disdain for these lack of centralized entities that are allowed to, like, make changes on, like, Twitter, for instance, that the users have absolutely no say in. So what DAO first is it's really an extrapolation of even that, where it's that these centralized companies and organizations and people that run them and C-suites and chairmen and executives, they're honestly fucking up crypto more than they're helping. And so DAO first wasn't my idea. It was like Troy was working with me on something called Singles DAO through Singular DTV. And we were basically trying to set up a DAO back in like August of 2019 before like anyone was even like, I mean, people were working on it, but not the way Troy had thought through it. So Troy sold me on DAOs. Then when I met Kane, I basically asked him, like, just on one of our calls, because we had a whole bunch of calls with him. And I was like, what's, like, the one thing that you would have done different, like, at the offset, like, starting Haven and Synthetics? Like, what would you have done different? And then he said, I would have never, like, had a company or a foundation. We would have just started with a DAO and never essentially had one. And so that sparked Troy's interest, because of Troy's interest in DAOs and my education through Troy, like, I kind of immediately understood what Kane was proposing that we actually do. And so I, like, named it DAO first, and I get, like, credit for the movement, but I was more kind of existentially impacted by Troy and Kane. But the purpose of DAO first is that there is no legal entity. You're basically trying to roll out a DAO. You're trying to find stakeholders that you can roll these things out to, and then also get tokens in the hands of a wider swath of a community. Now, like, when you can do ICOs, like, they had a lot of decentralization, at least in terms of, like, they have 50,000 holders, but none of their actual, like, token ratios or breakdowns look anything like Barnbridge's. Like, when you look at Barnbridge's actual, like, pie chart, like, no one owns more than 4%, 5% of the supply. And there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people that have a meaningful stake, where we have to come together to, like, make these decisions. And honestly, if the community wanted to throw me out from working on it, they could make that happen. I don't think that we got it, like, 100% right on Barnbridge in terms of going DAO first, because it was the truly, like, first DAO first, like, entity. But I think that we are getting it right over time. And if anything, I almost think that DAO first as an innovation was probably more profound on the crypto industry than what Barnbridge's actual products were. But we set off doing two pretty ambitious things. We wanted to introduce some of the first structured products in crypto, but then on top of that, do DAO first. And so I think everybody kind of thought it was going to be DAO summer, and then it wasn't. So I just tried to go and create a bunch of DAOs and get people like y'all to do it as well. And then I think that as better DAO tooling comes into the industry, there's, like, a ton of funds coming from Silicon Valley and like top end, like old Google execs that are trying to build companies that work on DAO tooling. As some of these things flood in, and then like we build more governance structures into our DAOs that are kind of getting built around Barnbridge and the Universe ecosystem, we're going to be able to use, like, in the same way that people have forked our entire DAO, we'll be able to fork features and share features. So I think that some of it will come externally and some of it will happen internally organically. But I think when we're looking back like 5 years from now, the outlook of going DAO first and having a DAO and what DAO governance and organizational output looks like, it'll be drastically different than where it is today. But we had to start somewhere.
Nice. Let's dive a bit into Barnbridge. And the reason I want to go deeper into that is it's essentially the first DAO first protocol that you built, and it's been out there for more than a year, and we have the most takeaways in comparison to like Universe Center and all the other stuff that we're building. I still think Barnbridge doesn't get enough credit for what you guys have built, and it's probably most of the products, I'm sure you agree, are ahead of its time in terms of maturity of the market in the DeFi space. But you guys have accomplished quite a bit. I mean, you have, in the space of 1 year or so, you guys have launched 3 products which are really sophisticated and have also spun out or incubated another protocol called Fiat DAO, which is now in development. Can you, like, 2 questions here. So first is, can you dive a bit deeper into the products that you guys have built? Basically, a short explanation of Smart Yield, Smart Exposure, and Smart Alpha in Barnbridge, and then what are the biggest takeaways or challenges that you have come across over the past year of building those 3 products in a DAO first way?
So one of them has been how do you kind of, I mean, this is a really long, like I could go on for days because I've really thought about like writing, like actually articles about how you like scale in a DAO. Like, so like, because I am not like the CEO, like I think everyone like calls me the founder, but I'm like a co-founder. So like, I can't make like executive decisions on behalf of the core team and very much so like on behalf of like the community. So like sometimes us having the organizational like structure where we have to make a decision like quickly can get lost. Now we fix some of that through, we have like a multi-sig that the founders are on, but one of the issues with the multi-sig in my opinion is that we didn't know when we allocated the money to it like how much money was going to be like that was going to be worth, and at this point it's probably worth 3 to 5 years of runway. And I think some of that is like hampered the decentralization of it and where we look to the community on these things. So I think that on our immediate products, there's things that need to get fixed. But I think we also need to like scale. And I think that there needs to be like an easier way for our community to come up and like actually do work and for developers to show up and actually like contribute to these protocols. And we're working on that. I mean, that's one of the number one things that I think that we'll work on in 2022. But partially because we launched 3 products, the ability to kind of upkeep and make changes on those, I think that we need to start having like more segmented efforts to those types of things because they are extremely advanced. There's a lot of really cool things that you can do with them. So I won't talk really about Smart Exposure because, let me just kind of go through them. So like Smart Sure. Yield is basically it operates very similar to like an interest rate swap right now, where we're taking like a variable annuity from Aave or Compound and breaking it up where like one side is essentially insured a fixed rate, let's say like 5%, even if the originator's interest rate's at like 8%. And then the kind of riskier side takes now a more variable leveraged interest rate. So if you expect interest rates to go up, you would take the riskier side, which is like basically a levered bet on interest rates going up. And then if you essentially want to just have a fixed rate of return and lock something in for cash flows and planning, then you can take the less risky side. And so that was really, in my opinion, and still is probably the best implementation of interest rates, that fixed interest rates that crypto's seen up to this point. I think that there's some things that we need to do in order to improve the product and improve the product experience, because there's competitors coming into the market. Like, up to this point, we kind of, I don't really think, had like real competitors that I really thought knew what they were doing, but now we do. And so I think it's now about improving the user experience so that we can really start to get a lot of usage of the products. Like, we've sort of had the blessing that due to the lack of competition, we were able to really, really, really make sure that we got things right and honed it from a security perspective, where like YFI at the time was just ship stuff out and then fix it later, test and prod. We took a different approach where we shipped very slow and tried to make sure that like we built a brand and reputation on safety. And I think that some of the things that improve user experience in crypto also are their trade-offs, right? Their trade-offs with safety and security. And I think that this year we're going to have to, next year, we're going to have serious conversations about those trade-offs. Smart Exposure, we kind of started on accident by starting, like we were modeling for Smart Alpha, and like we thought we had come up with a product that was really solid for like rebasing and could have been like a legitimate competitor to something like Set Protocol. But when Balancer V2 or V3 came out in the middle of us shipping it, they had a lot of the features that were in there, and it was honestly just more advanced. So like Smart Exposure is a way to handle risk and like rebalance between two assets. Like, I just want to sit in a 55% BTC position and a 45% ETH position. And some of the capital efficiency that went about on how you rebase, like rebalance those positions, can just help you like structure a more like risk managed protocol portfolio. But I think at some point in 2022, there's a chance we'll probably relegate that product because of some of the other innovation that came out during the time. And honestly, because I think the other two products and one that we're working on are just frankly like more advanced. They took a lot more time to code, and I think they'll have more usage. One of those is Smart Alpha, which we just released. And basically Smart Alpha allows you to manage the volatility. So like these underlying assets aren't necessarily backed by cash flows. Like some of them are yielding assets like Ohm or like staked ETH essentially. But some of them are just like volatile assets that, you know, it's very difficult to determine what you think that they're worth and where they're going. So basically Smart Alpha is a way where you can essentially take like $100 and split it out into two $50 proofs of liquidity. And one essentially would represent like 35% of the upside and downside volatility, and one would represent 75% of the upside and downside volatility. So like a senior Smart Alpha position is basically like low risk ETH, where if the market drops by 35%, you're essentially protected up to a certain amount. And if it goes up, you're not just giving away all the upside volatility either. So like you can then be in an asset that is a lower risk version with still allowing you to have, it still allows you to have, upside exposure. Right. And then, the junior side is basically the same thing as the junior side on Smart Yield. It's a levered bet. You're essentially, you're taking all of the you're taking a good chunk of the senior's upside in order to give them the assurance of downside protection.
Awesome. No, I definitely think that I consider Barbage to be like a blue chip DeFi protocol just because the products you guys have built are among the most sophisticated in terms of actual financial products, but also the most secure ones. Who, in terms of...
When I think of Barbage, like, I don't think of it as like a protocol that hasn't gotten product market fit. I think of it as a protocol that had some struggles through going DAO first and figuring out like organizationally how that works. And I think that that probably cost us about 4 months. But if you look at everything that we like, not at one time, right? Just over the whole aggregate of the year.
Sure.
Kind of learning how to be a DAO first protocol. And then I would also say that we still shipped like probably one protocol that we maybe shouldn't have focused on as much. And then two that are like extremely groundbreaking and ahead of their time. And I think as we build on top of those and then introduce a product that the core dev team's working on called Sailor, I think that we actually will be in a spot by like midway through next year where we have three very solid like foundations to build off of. And like, I think the concept of things needing to happen in 6 months in crypto is stupid. Like it took MakerDAO like 5 years, right? And like Rune was working on the concept of MakerDAO before it ever even existed. So like when traditional financial groups start coming into crypto, the people that are playing the long game and like haven't been hacked and have built a reputation, it's something that they know how to use. And then on top of all the fungibility of like all the money Legos, that's also going to expedite like the speed and usage of Barbage. And the other thing I would say is I think we were set back also by like layer twos a little bit. Like I kind of thought optimism would have shipped a lot faster than it did. And the reason that layer twos are so expensive specifically to Barbage is because when you're a money Lego, you have to assume all the gas fees on deposit into various protocols. So like when you're depositing into Barbage, you're depositing into Barbage, then depositing into Compound. Same with when you withdraw, right? So everything's now doubled in terms of the cost of these things. And that has to be baked into like the interest rate, essentially. As we move to layer twos, though, and now we're in a spot that like with Polygon buying Hermes and Optimism actually being something that we're able to build on at this point, the types of products that we're going to be able to build on top of Barbage are drastically more advanced will have far better user experiences than what the primitives are. So it was really about shipping the primitives in 2021, and DMob will be building that into 2022 as well. But at this point, I think that we're in a position where we can improve these primitives and actually build entire applications and entire companies on top of them that plug into them that may or may not even have to say anything about Barbage on it. But as base primitives like a MakerDAO, I think that because of the way that a lot of the industry wasn't DAO first before and had these foundations and companies that went and then built apps, mm-hmm. Now I think that this is going to get flipped where we're going to have DAOs that power protocols and applications, and then you can have companies and apps build further additional things on top of it. And the benefit to that is that any company can now come in and build on Barbage. You don't need my permission or anyone else's. You don't even need the DAOs to plug into it. But the benefit to it is that anyone can kind of come in and do it, acquire the bond token, start to care about how this thing is governed by a much larger swath of people, essentially. So I don't think that we haven't gotten recognition in the market for any other reason than I think we normally operate about 6 to 8 months ahead of everyone else, I feel like. And we also had some setbacks in learning DAO first. And honestly, I mean, you saw it with like Universe, like we didn't have it all figured out by then, but I think we do. I mean, we haven't completely figured it out, but I think that, I mean, I'm going to be shocked if in 2020, like everyone thought that 2021 was like my year because I went and started all these DAOs. I actually think it's going to be 2022 because really we were just laying like groundwork the past year. All this like mesh network of our DAOs all together, we were just talking about them. In 2022, people are really going to be able to use them.
No, I love it. And you mentioned that, especially with Bound, that you guys are just laying the foundations for what is to be built. And you mentioned that you feel that you haven't got the product market fit quite yet. Do you believe that, I mean, have you built these financial products with like institutional capital in mind? Because a lot of them are relatively sophisticated to be grasped by retail. Do you expect more institutional adoption in DeFi in particular in those products?
Yeah, at long term, I think it's inevitable. Now, we still have to build things that like retail will use in the meantime, because you can't just like be waiting on Sunday forever. But I think that like without question, more institutional money will come in. And I also think that it still goes to some of the L2 stuff, like some of these. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's not only that Barnbridge is ahead of his time. I don't think the industry is quite ready for it. And I put synthetics in that category too, but I don't think they're going anywhere. And so now that with the layer twos being in a much better place where we can build more experimental things on top of it. The base primitives, when financial institutions come in, the financial institutions have regulatory unclarity. I don't think that the wallet integrations are really where they need to be. Like Fireblox is in an awesome spot, but like I feel like Copper's kind of lagging at this point behind Fireblox. Coinbase custody has like, you know, they built into the ability to stake in synthetics, but there's very large groups that need regulatory clarity and better like institutional tooling. And we're starting to see that, right? Like Fireblox is innovating, MetaMask Institutional is innovating, Coinbase Custody is asking DeFi builders to come build with Coinbase. It's coming one way or another. And also I would say that once we ship out these three primitives for Barnbridge, well then, like, I don't know, maybe we don't just keep building primitives forever. I think the ones that we have, kind of similar to UMA, are good enough foundations to build on. So I think between the industry advancing, DAOs and DAO tooling advancing, maybe even call it maturing, and then our ability to focus on the three primitives that we have, I think that, I don't like stay up at night worried about kind of where we're at on product market fit, like, because I know it's coming and I kind of know how it's going to get there.
Nice. And where do you see the broader DeFi space going? Obviously, layer twos are here and it will take some time until they get more widely adopted. Do you see the trend of protocol-owned liquidity like Calm and all these other protocols basically evolving and taking over, or at least do you see the DeFi space evolving around this concept, or basically what trends do you see going forward in the next 1 or 2 years in the DeFi space?
I mean, Olympus, yeah. Like, I think Olympus, the innovation that they brought into DeFi, like innovation kind of moves in cycles, right? And so
yep.
I think what they created was so unique and different when a bunch of stuff came out with, like, it was honestly kind of like DAO first, right? Like that innovated a lot of DeFi. Like we're not the only DAO first, like there's groups that are building DAOs that, and some of that also happened when NFTs were blowing up. So I think it even affected the metaverse more. And then honestly, Olympus, what since DAO first happened, was the most like advanced thing that I saw in DeFi up to that point. And then with like kind of the self-repaying loans concepts and like, how do you handle stability and collateralization, and the fact that the Barnbridge DAO at one point had $100 million of its own token, but then meanwhile we took 20% of our supply and incentivized liquidity providers for a period of years. The concept of liquidity, like, owned by a protocol, and a protocol being able to be the counterparty on that, I think was extremely innovative. Also in how it's allowed Olympus to diversify its treasury. And I don't think that it's going to stop at liquidity. Like, I think that the ability for governance to decide, like, what types of assets are accepted as collateral, similar to what YFI does. I mean, that's some stuff that, like, I got from George and what he was doing through ReFi Finance. But then also, like, extrapolating it out to, you know, like, when there's mortgages on chain one day, like, maybe a DAO is the counterpart. Like, there will be a Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So yeah, I think that, like, these concepts are here to stay, and yeah, some of them will blow up and they'll go out of vogue, but I think that's where the innovation's going. And I think it's going to beg a lot of, the good thing about Barnbridge is, like, we're not, like, retired, and a lot of these DeFi protocols that were DeFi 1 are. And I think that they're going to have some extremely, like, serious conversations around their tokenomics, because, like, if everybody's not going to agree to do something, like, protocol-owned liquidity, because, you know, people are viewing it as a pie that there's only so much to go around, then yeah, I think that that's going to fuck up some DeFi protocols. And I also think that the same will happen as DAO innovation comes into the tech stack. There's a lot of, like, early people that, you know, aren't involved in governance, aren't helping build on any of these protocols. They're a part of the DAO, but they don't really do shit. And that's where you've started to see VCs actually hiring devs, like what Standard Crypto and ALOC did with coding up, like, the Gauntlet thing for Aave. And so I think I mean, I'm saying this to you who runs a dev shop. I think that this concept of, well, how do I say this? I think that it's not just DeFi 1 that we're going to see is outdated in the next 5 years. I think that the concepts of dev shops, VCs, design firms, I think all that shit's going to get disrupted through DAOs. But the groups that aren't willing to make those changes are going to get left in the dust. And I even thought about that through, like, I work with this guy from Default, and he's semi-anon, so it's fully allocated, but I worked with him in a past life, and he's probably one of the smartest people I've ever met. And he was the one who talked me into, on XYZ, not having a fixed supply of tokens, so that you can essentially stream to, like, long-term, where I think this goes is you can stream tokens to people who are really working hard, and they can signal to each other. There's less, like, people who got in early and didn't really do shit. And then there's also people that probably aren't getting compensated what they deserve, and, like, nobody's really bringing it up. A lot of that's going to start happening through signaling and all of these types of things, where, like, for InterDAO, I probably haven't, other than the initial kind of raises and being there and kind of being there for everything that I can do, maybe for Fiat and Inter, people would signal to me, like, hey, you need to help more in this area. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? Like, that constructive criticism actually lets me know where I need to be helping and what I need to be doing. I'm not on Fiat or InterDAO as, like, some grifter that got tokens and didn't do shit, but everyone knows that those people are in DAOs, right? And so a way to signal that, kick people out, have a more, like, fluid structure without screwing people over, I think that's where all this is headed. And I think protocol-owned liquidity is part of that, where these DAOs are determining that the DAO should be providing liquidity. And yeah, if you don't have if you have a token that is at a set supply, and then you go tell people we're going to print the shit out of it at an 8,000% interest rate to collateralize the DAO better. Yeah. I mean, like, some of those DAO boomers aren't just, or token holders, they're not going to come around to what this is. And that's fine. But then they're going to just get left behind because someone else newer, hungrier is going to come in and implement those things. And so, yeah, do you want a smaller pie of something innovative that's going to be there in the future? Or do you want a bigger pie of something that's going to get its ass kicked? But that's not my decision to make for the industry. But I think that it will have a very fundamental impact on pretty much the way that I used to do business, the way that you used to do business, the way that VCs do business, the way that, I think it's going to work though. I wouldn't fight it.
Oh, for sure. I love the term DAO boomers. We've been through a lot. DAO boomers.
DAO boys?
No, DAO boomers.
Yeah. Maybe just like Web3 boomers, you know? Like, we have these protocols like that. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't mean actual boomers, but some of them are.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that if you're looking at where all this is headed, like, people bring this up to me with like, oh, you have all these different DAOs. Like, how do you focus on them? It's like, they're not companies. They're DAOs that power protocols. So like the 100%. Maintenance and upkeep isn't necessarily the same thing. And so like the when people are like, try to treat me like a CEO and they're like, you need to focus and do one thing. And it's like, in a weird way, this is focusing because I'm ensuring that more ideas get funded and more innovation gets built around this type of technology specifically. And that's better than kind of a horizontal track. So like you in traditional like worlds, if you were going to say DAOs are synonymous with companies, but they're not companies, right? Companies, you would essentially scale almost vertically, right? So like the way that Amazon Web Services came about was so many people, like, they needed such good cloud infrastructure in order to run that e-commerce thing that they would like build it up and it'd break. They'd build it up and it'd break. And then they realized that they had built something so advanced there that in and of itself was something that they should be selling, similar to kind of what I did with my going from running e-commerce companies to helping people run e-commerce companies through like an agency format. That's kind of how networks scale naturally. And so with DAOs, with a company, that was all built in an integrated stack essentially, right? And companies are Keynesian. They can print more shares, right? But yep. Basically what we essentially did through this DAO first construct is because of incentives, this is open source technology, we can find teams and spin them out, right, into other things. Synthetics mm-hmm. started to do that with Lyra and like Thales. Barnbridge did it with Fiat, and Universe did it with all the stuff that were, I mean, it's like, I always thought it was going to be Barnbridge Mafia. It might be Universe Mafia with like InnerDAO and Altered State Machine and everything that's getting built there. And basically that's an example of a different type of expansion. It's horizontal expansion as opposed to vertical expansion. So it may actually end up extrapolating to what Aave like builds next in terms of innovation. They're essentially going to hit a point where just buying Compound is actually a better financial move than to continue to ship out new things and new products. So like, we have three different products at Barnbridge. We actually have three different protocols, and maybe one DAO shouldn't be powering those. That's something the community can make that decision long term, right? Because you could spin out every single one of those as their own protocol and DAO. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's something that it could extrapolate to, where these DAOs are very specific about building on very certain functions. And even these like websites like barnbridge.com, where you go access a application, that may long-term just be an informational website that explains how an application and how a tech company can plug into Barnbridge, because barnbridge.com may be not the brand of what ends up making a ton of money built on top of it, but it still accrues a ton of value back to the protocol layer. And so, I mean, that's a really long answer, but I don't, some of these are my opinions and some of these are just kind of what I see is where the world's going. But yeah, I think it's going to take some time, but again, like I said earlier, I think it's going to be profoundly disruptive as much as the internet.
We're on the same page. I definitely agree. And I appreciate you, the comparison with Amazon and the vertical against horizontal. Last question on my end, because I'm also conscious of your time and don't want to keep you on this podcast forever. You mentioned that your mission here is not to be a CEO, but rather to make sure that teams and ideas get funded and innovation gets built. I know that not only through the DAOs you're building, but you're also an active investor through the fund D64 and as an angel as well. What are the things that you're most interested in at the moment? Obviously, you've done so much in DeFi, but you're quite active in NFTs and metaverse stuff. What is on top of your mind right now? And what do you, what are you looking to get built in the next 12 months?
Okay, so D64 kind of came about because, I guess because I, like, I'm not saying this in like a cocky way, it's just is the truth. Like, I kind of became like the face and the spokesperson for a lot of the things that we were working on. And so because of that, I was getting like better access to like deals. Like, I was getting into things like extremely early. And when some of those things like really took off, like Alluvium and Pleaser, and then I was getting just kind of like super early access into a ton of like innovative stuff that's coming out. It was because like people kind of wanted to work with me on all of the DAO stuff and wanted to work with Barnbridge and things we were building. So I really just started D64 to get like people who aren't like taking calls all day. Like, cause I was taking a lot of calls more just to be like, I'm genuinely curious about what this group's building. Like, it wasn't even like, I wasn't even investing to like make money. But at this point, I think I've made way more money off investing than I have building over the past 5 years. But like, it was really like, hey, this is dope. Like, I want to help. Here's like 10 or 50 grand. Right. Like, and so basically because it is real money that some of that turned into, I thought that I was doing like a disservice to the people that were building with us that didn't have time to do that kind of R&D. So I like D64's purpose was more to like break everyone that is busy building and doesn't have time to be on like whatever those calls were, like discovery time calls. And so like our thesis for D64 was very much about like gaming and NFTs, and where those converge with DeFi, really, really, I would say a year before anybody else was even talking about it. So like that thesis was spot on, right? Like the games did take off, Alluvium crushed it. All the NFT stuff that we did, even the crazy Please or Die drunkenly bought a picture of a unicorn and then they bought the Wu-Tang album 8 months later, like Universe, all the stuff that we spun out of that, like, it's definitely working on the metaverse side. I think that that D64 thesis that I've pinned in my Twitter is mostly true, right? And then I would say that right now, the areas that I call it like kind of scratching the surface of relevance, because like up until that point, games and NFTs, they were there and like we always kind of knew about them and knew about CryptoKitties. But it was always kind of this like either way too esoteric, this is like some weird shit, or like just some just bonkers off the wall ideas. It's like, this is never going to work, right? Like, I'm going to build a video game. Like, even the concept of most of what we're doing with InnerDAO, like if that had been pitched to me in late 2019, I would be like, this is like a long way away, right? So I think that I noticed kind of early on that it was like scratching the surface of relevancy. Like it was like no longer seemed like scammy to me. Like it wasn't like completely relevant yet, but like I could tell that like there were things that were starting to break through that were like making a lot of sense. There was a lot of excitement in the NFT community. There was a lot of excitement around games and what was happening with Axie. So basically the next thing that I think is at that level of really starting to scratch the surface of relevance has to do with definitely things around DAO tooling. And I don't know if those are going to end up being companies that are service providers to DAOs. So I don't know if it's tokens or equity that people will want to own. I think we'll find out, but that's something I'm going to be very actively building and investing in 2022. Because that, in my opinion, is been ahead of its time and it's more needed than any point. The other one that I would bring up that I feel like has been scammy up to this point and is starting to scratch the surface of relevancy has to do with clean technology and actually like doing mining and like clean, like wrapped versions of clean coins that and like large funds can hold on their balance sheet. Just not only like from a let's save the world perspective, but from like a business perspective, if you can essentially mine things at net positive and then start to power applications from those things. And then like one of the reasons like OnlyFans isn't making porn anymore, doesn't want to, is because Andreessen Horowitz's largest LP is the Bank of England. And like, imagine if like the US government was one of the biggest shareholders of Pornhub. So like eventually when these large organizations like the Bank of England and the Saudi Arabian government start to take positions in Bitcoin like El Salvador did, I think the green impact and the cleanliness of it is going to become more and more political. And I think as a result of that, like where you kind of see like ClimaDAO really pushing forward some of that relevancy, like what Aaron's doing with CarbonClick and being able to offset transactions of like your usage on the blockchain, as well as, those are the new things that I think that I'm going to, I was investing in the DAO tooling 6 months ago, but I just think what I'm starting to see now is far superior to what kind of seemed like pipe dreams. And I think clean tech, mm-hmm. So I'm going to keep investing in games and the metaverse and DeFi, but I think that I really want to start paying attention to what's going on in the clean energy space and DAO tooling specifically. I think those are going to outperform the prior three over the next 2 years.
Interesting. No, I love the insight.
Just because we already kind of had the run-up from the metaverse, right?
Yeah, like,
It's baked in. I don't necessarily think we're going to see more innovation, but when you're talking about investing, I think people are talking about prices.
Oh, for sure. No, I definitely think the DAO tooling space is wide open and quite interested in that as well. Awesome. Before we wrap up, where can the people find you on Twitter? What are you looking for across the DAOs? Are you looking for more contributors? Is there anything that you want to shout out?
I mean, always developers, which, as you know, is like just the most throttled piece in this industry. But I think that in 2022, I'm going to be like very public about like I'm starting a company to build on like applications on top of Barnbridge. Like I'm going to try to talk with the community about like specking and scoping out things that they want built in like an extremely organized way that they can then go like find groups that can build on top of it. So like I'm going to try to almost like lead by example and teach everybody like the things that I think that they have the power to do now, even if they don't realize that they have that power. So I would just say, like, I want to, like, start to incentivize more, like, even if you're not a dev, like, you can still help. Where, like, trying to find a way to start, like, incentivizing working groups within DAOs, like, incentivizing the community to actually like kind of know what they can start doing. Like we built Squad DAO back in way back in the day, like hoping that some of this would happen. And I just think because nobody really quite understands this stuff, maybe as much as me and some of the people that are really close building it, they don't realize that they have some of the abilities they don't. So I think as I start working on that stuff with close community members that have already been really excited, we'll see success there, and then we'll bring it to InterDAO, and then we'll see successful things from InterDAO, and we'll bring it to Barnbridge. So I would more so say that, like, what we really need are either developers or really, really engaged community members that are paying very close attention, because, like, there may be a point in the future where, like, you can work on 3 to 5 DAOs, but that's about it. Like, I can't keep up with, like, everything that's going on at this point anymore. Yeah. And the people that just kind of casually are paying attention and go and drop a comment here and there in Discord, it's really just a lot of noise. But there are people that are, like, really, really, like, putting 15 to 20 hours into an Alluvium, into a Barnbridge, into an InterDAO. And so I think we need more people like that, because I do think it's going to turn into constructive working groups that not everybody has to be a dev. But then obviously devs always, right? But the way people can find me is, well, I'm not hard to find. I mean, you can just go on any of the Discords of the things that we've started and you can find me. But, like, I'm on, I tweet a lot, like, just shower thoughts throughout the day. I'll, like, put on Twitter. So, like, Lord Tyler Ward, which I'm not, like, a douchebag. It was a funny name in college and then it stuck and now I don't want to change it. A funny story about Lord Tyler Ward is it was my Facebook name, and then, like, Facebook, you had to, like, you got to do this thing to change your name, essentially show them, like, legally whatever. So when Uber first got started, it, like, linked to set up my account through Facebook. So when I get in, like, taxis now, they're like, "Are you Lord?" And I'm like, "Yes,
I'm Lord." Nice, I love that. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this podcast just before the holidays, and more so, I appreciate you building together over the past year. I was super excited for 2022, and I hope you have an amazing holidays with the family. Get some rest, because I know how hard you've been building lately.
I need a little rest, but I'm, like, honestly excited to get back. And honestly, meeting y'all was a godsend. Like, just passionate builders that actually know how to build stuff is, like, there aren't very many people like you and George and the team that y'all have assembled.
I appreciate it. Awesome. Thank you, man. Let's wrap this up. Have an amazing holidays and see you soon.
Yeah, for sure.
Peace.